Trent.
So to begin with, we've got a couple housekeeping items. First thing I'll do is ask if there's any public comment from anyone. Okay, hearing none, we'll move forward. We had introductions, so we got that out of the way, but we have had one new member who was doing the good deeds on the, as we used to say, on the hill. There's really not a hill here, but. So Mary, you want to take a minute and introduce yourself?
Hello, it's so nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me to join the group. I really appreciate it. My name's Mary Przinski, and I'm the former superintendent of the Carson City School District, and now I am a lobbyist. I know that's a bad word, so I'm a governmental representative for the Nevada Association of School Superintendents, and these are two of the NAS members, of course, here, and you've already met them. So any rate, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm really looking forward to participating with this group, and thank you for including me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Very good. Moving on, we're subject to an open meeting law, and Mark is going to give us a quick overview of that to make sure that we all don't have happen what happened to the Washoe County School District. That we Nevada has very specific requirements on those type things. So. What's that, Buzz?
Is there a movement to fire you? I don't
think
so.
But before we get into that, I just give a little quick background. The reason this committee was formed was a direct offshoot of a legislative initiative that was early last year into the summer that both Buzz and Mary served on, was known as Senate Bill 391, that was really looking at the governance and role of community colleges in the state. And there are a lot of things put on the table with that series of meetings that looked at all the way from taking community colleges out from the Nevada system of higher ed and giving them their own system, what best practices were, to meeting workforce needs around the state, what we're doing specifically. And ultimately, on the governance side, there was a sense that the community colleges needed to be more connected with the communities they serve. In the past, Western has had a series of advisory boards, one here in Carson, one in Fallon, one in Douglas County, but they were more, I guess you'd say, more a informational conduit, that they, you know, it was a meeting and it was just kind of, this is what's going on. And it really wasn't, I don't think, as much probably two-way communication as it could have been. It wasn't as engaging as it could have been, and ultimately, I think the one big difference, though, with this committee as compared to what those advisory councils were just the fact that whoever is elected chair from this group will actually have a seat with the community college subcommittee with the Board of Regents. And that has never happened before, to have that direct link with the board, who's, you know, our boss, are basically our board of directors. So I think that's the major difference, and clearly it will be great for that, because the presidents can talk a lot about what's going on with their colleges and what we need, but when it comes from the actual constituency and the people that we're serving, I think it will have a lot more impact in regard to how the board uses and what's going on. So I think that's an important distinction within this group as what has been in the past. You all received the copy of the committee charter that was formed by the region. It was on, you know, so there a lot went into that. I'm not going to go into it again. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I guess I'll open it up. Is there any questions or concerns regarding the charter or what the mission is?
Can I just add something to what you said? I also think, and I hope Mary agrees with me on this, that one of the concerns that came out of the committee was how the colleges relate, or how the Board of Regents relate to the colleges as well. It's documented that 80% of the work that regents do focus on the universities. And it was really the feeling of a lot of people that they're not hearing the community colleges, which was really the grassroots reason why the governance issue was even looked at, to move it from the regents and so forth. So I think the setup of these committees is the Board of Regents' effort to say, we are listening, we are going to hear you. If we haven't in the past, we're going to now. And so it's really the responsibility of this committee and the other advisory committees to make sure that we hold their feet to the fire on this.
I would totally agree with you, Buzz. I think that's exactly what the deal was.
I think there was another caveat that was added to it that really kind of inspired and pushed this, because we worked on the bill from the outside and kind of monitored its progress, even though we weren't directly involved. We had some input and say on the collaboration and the development of the bill. And I think the push was really from the standpoint that there had been this ongoing concern about budget issues and the actual loss of funds to the community colleges without any input as or any regards to their funding concerns and their budgetary concerns. So it was an attempt to say, hey, look, to the Board of Regents, especially with Dan Klage, you know, that you can't arbitrarily come in and just cut budgets without giving any consideration to student, faculty, and ongoing operations and maintenance, which 90% of community colleges budget is directly tied to the state's budget. So without any consideration or dialogue or at least talking to the presidents and addressing their concerns, this bill was formed. Now, in its original intent, its genesis was basically to say that allow the community colleges to set up their own boards based on best practices throughout the country, to determine their own light and destiny and their own budgetary issues. So the final passage of the bill was actually consensus and collaboration, and I think it was more driven by Mr. Klage. Most of you might not be able to say that, but I'll say it. Driven by Mr. Klage as a means to at least satisfy somewhat of the concerns. And I will also say this, that this is not the first time this has come up. During my tenure, and you were probably there, Mary, we really pushed Dan to come up with a different funding formula to address not only Nietzsche, but community colleges that would be more equitable to the community colleges. And, the votes were there, but it kind of had a reluctance to, and I don't know if it was because of the Board of Regents or if that was his own choice, but he didn't take advantage of it. He stayed the course, and here we are today.
Thank you. I think, though, that, you know, as a lot of things in life are, there were compromises, but the big changes I see is, A, the board did at least convene a subcommittee just for community colleges.
Exactly.
This was not happening again, as well as the system leadership creating a vice chancellor for community college position that will actually look out for community colleges to be on the chancellor's cabinet. So I think that those were very positive.
I think they were too.
And so then to move it a step further, as we went into the formation of this committee or council, there's so many stakeholders when you look at the region we serve. It's so diverse from, the real urban, Carson City, which is evolving, to the rural districts and the different, and the five different school districts are very different in their composition. So it was a challenge in looking at, when I looked at, I wanted to make sure that we both had representation from our industry sectors that are key employers in the area, and the different diverse type industries from construction, the machine tooling, the manufacturing, local government, the K-12, which is increasingly important partnership, I think, as well as geographic diversity. So it was a real challenge, and probably not everyone at the end of the day was on the board that maybe should have, but we were constrained by numbers. Also, not here today, but also representing as ad hoc members, not voting, are the other three superintendents, because obviously it's important that everyone is looked at more or less equally, as well as the president of our faculty senate, who's Susan Priest, and the president of our student government, which is Angela DePress. And so because of class and other things, they weren't able to be here, but I just wanted to put that out, that it is, I think, I'm really excited. I'm so happy to see, that everyone stepped up to serve on this, because I really do think it's very, very important. And I do think we've got a great group that do represent all the different stakeholders that WNC has in our service area. So with that said, and not to get us any more trouble, I'll turn it over to Mark to give us a quick briefing on the Nevada open meeting law to make sure we stay on the straight and narrow.
I have just some copies. If you need these, but this is, I see you've already copied the manual. My name's Mark Gant. I'm the Vice President for Administrative Services and General Counsel for the college. I've been with the Attorney General's Office for a long time, and then been 14 years with the system, 8 of that here at the college as Vice President. In the last year and a half or so, our responsibilities, our duties have changed quite a bit, and I've taken on a lot of stuff that Chet had when he was the Vice President of Finance and Administrative Services. So it's interesting. We're pretty lean at the top, as you might imagine. It's just Chet has two vice presidents, and then one dean and a number of directors. So all of the groups around the state have been are getting a small briefing about the Nevada open meeting law. It's a 30,000-foot view. Many of you know all about the open meeting law and how not necessarily onerous, but it's sometimes challenging to comply with. So you're familiar with it, and the rest of you, this is really directed at the rest of you. So Chet has encouraged me that there will be no death by PowerPoint, so this will be very brief. You all have in the drive that you received, the open meeting law manual, and I just saw a copy of it here, which you probably won't want to read, but it's a compilation of the Attorney General's opinions, and it's a manual that's been developed and added on and revised over the last, 20 years or so. There's dozens, if not hundreds, of opinions on the open meeting law. The Attorney General's office actually enforces the open meeting law when a complaint is made. The system, the Board of Regents has had its own troubles with the open meeting law in the past, but not for quite some time. Not in the last decade, as far as I know. In fact, as you heard Chet say, the most recent newsworthy story about the open meeting law had to do with the Washoe County School Board. And basically, they took action in private and violated, and there's 6 different violations of the open meeting law there. And there are people there, lots of experience, and probably should have known better. In any event, the Nevada open meeting law was adopted in 1960. The purpose is to provide open government and government action, government deliberations done in public where people can view it and critique it and comment about whatever actions might be taken. Let's see. When does the open meeting law apply? Well, the open meeting applies when a quorum of the members of the public body gather to deliberate toward an action or decision. So there's some loaded terms there. What's a quorum? A quorum of the members of the public body is a simple majority of the members unless they're appointed. So the Board of Regents, for example, is a elected body. They have to take action. They can only take action by a vote of at least 7 members of the board, 13 members, so a simple majority of all the members. This is a public body because you were appointed by and will provide recommendations to the Board of Regents, so this body is subject to the open meeting law, but the rules for a quorum are different with this body. A majority of the members present is sufficient for this body to take action on an action item that appears on an agenda. So the open meeting applies to meetings. And what's a meeting? A gathering of a quorum of the members to deliberate toward a decision. And deliberate has been defined by the case law over the years and in the statutes itself to mean collectively to examine, weigh, and reflect upon the reasons for or against the action, including the collective discussion or exchange of facts preliminary to the ultimate decision. So everything leading up to the decision. We got an old computer here.
Does that PowerPoint only affect the computer?
You may have Kelly. Okay. The open meeting also applies to serial meetings. So what's a serial meeting? That's groups of less than a quorum who meet to and deliberate, and then another group meets, and eventually you have a quorum who have deliberated, and in that situation it would be subject to the open meeting law. And this only would apply if deliberation toward a decision occurs or if the decisions are made with the intent to violate the open meeting law. Okay. The open meeting law does not apply to... social gatherings. So even if everyone who is a member of the public body is present at a social gathering, the open meeting law does not apply. So you're not prohibited from going to social functions together. The prohibition is upon about deliberating toward a decision at an event. It doesn't apply to meetings with attorneys regarding potential or existing litigation. We don't have any litigation here at the college at this time, which is a happy thing. For me, or to receipt of information at briefings, so long again as no deliberation occurs. So that's really a critical phrase. They're posting an agenda requirements for the open meeting law. Now, this really isn't your problem. This is we here at the college will be responsible for making sure that the posting and agenda requirements of the law are satisfied. And you'll see on your agenda, there's just about all of this information appears that's required by the statutes. The time of the meeting, the place of the meeting. Meetings, of course, are open. Closed meetings are permissible under really special circumstances. We have to post the agenda in at least 3 places, including the place where the meeting is to be held. We provide in this agenda a statement regarding persons with disabilities and how they can be accommodated. The agenda items are required to be clear and concise. And in fact, clear and concise and complete. Such phrases as in matters relating thereto have been found to be too broad. They open the door too wide, and the Attorney General's office would find that to be outside the scope of the agenda item. We are required to have public comment at the beginning of a meeting before any action is taken, and at the end of the meeting, or alternatively, after each item, and we talk about that in the agenda, the preface to the agenda. And in fact, in reviewing the agenda this morning, we found that there actually is an error in the agenda. And it has to do with the very last item, adjournment. And it says, for possible action. And the fact is, there are two things. We don't need a motion to adjourn a meeting. And second, you can't take action after public comment. So there's some technical requirements, and we missed one in preparing this agenda.
So he can never leave, sorry.
Hotel California.
Never ending the
We were trapped.
We were trapped.
But that's your money.
It's just slow. No, I went back.
That's the next one.
All right, that's the next one. We have to post an agenda by 9 o'clock, the third business day before meeting. We have to post it on our website and on the state has the administrative division website now for all public meetings. We'll provide it to persons who have requested to receive notice of particular meetings. Contact information for the supporting material in our agenda. There is a statement about how to obtain any materials, and that will be there in the future as well. We have to make the materials available. These are pretty straightforward requirements. The only exception to this agenda requirement, the three-day requirement, is an emergency, which would be, like it indicates, a fire, flood, earthquake. And I suppose what would have qualified was when we had the fire behind the college about 10 years ago. That would be an emergency. That would be a legitimate exception to the notice and posting requirements. Would you try to do this, and I'll just continue. So the next slide is about record-keeping requirements. And again, that's a responsibility that we would bear here at the college. In fact, Bonnie would be responsible for keeping the minutes. Let's see. No, record-keeping. That's the next one. So the minutes have to be available, which include the date, time, and place of the meeting, a list of the members who are present and those who are absent. The substance of all the matters discussed and decided, substance of remarks of the public, and copies of any written remarks that may be submitted, and a record of votes if a member should request that. We're also required to tape, as you can see, we've got a tape going. We're required to create a audio tape of the meetings. Or other sound reproduction, and I think it'll probably be transcribed by a court reporter. I think that's what our intention is. The recording, we have to keep the recordings for a year, and the minutes have to be available in 30 days, and so on. Again, that's a responsibility that we have here at the college. So, the next slide, how are meetings subject to the open meeting law to be conducted? Of course, they're public except in very limited circumstances. If they're held via telephone, and members of the public have to be able to hear anyone who speaks. People are entitled to record the meeting if they choose. This is one for this body. Discussions must remain on topic. We have to have clear and concise and complete agenda items, and then when you discuss and deliberate, you have to remain focused on the agenda item. An action is taken, again, by a majority of the members present for this body. There are some privileges that apply to public bodies, and one of those, well, all of you would have absolute privilege for any statements that you make during the meeting. And witnesses as well have a privilege. They can publish even defamatory statements so long as it's not knowingly, the statements are not knowingly made. Yes?
What is privilege? What does that mean?
That means you have a defense in the case you were sued. That would be an absolute defense.
And in the attendance, it is, do they have to be physically present in the room, or is tele?
No, video? No. You can be present by telephone.
Okay, and that counts as a forum member.
Sure. It's more logistically difficult to make sure that everyone can hear the members from wherever they might be. But yeah, that's perfectly appropriate. Yes,
of course. Well, the word witnesses, is that anybody speaking in public or somebody asked by the governing board?
I think anyone who's invited to speak by the board on a particular topic. As for people who come in and make statements, and I don't believe the privilege extends to public comment. And regarding the public comment, I mean, the public body has the right to shut someone down if they are disruptive, if they're off topic, and so on. There are limited circumstances where, and maybe at a school board meeting, you've heard someone who's angry, and you being angry, you can't shut them down because of their viewpoint, but you can shut them down if they are disrupting the meeting.
Also, Mark, during public comment, the chair has the privilege of limiting to a certain length.
Sure, and our agendas, I think, indicate 2 minutes, and that's a reasonable limitation on public comment. So we're going to consideration of character. This one, yeah. We wouldn't do this very often, probably this body wouldn't very often. Consider the character, misconduct, professional competence, or physical or mental health of a person. But if it's done, there's special requirements and special hearing conduct requirements for that. You can't discuss these things without giving that person advance written notice. And this applies to even giving someone an award. You know, we want to thank someone, give them an award. We either give them notice, and it's 21 days notice, or ask them to waive the notice so that we can make some kind of presentation. So there are some penalties for violations of the open meeting law. If you attending a meeting and where action is taken that violates the open meeting law, and you know that there's a violation, you participated in the action, that could constitute a misdemeanor. Excluding, wrongful exclusion of someone could be a misdemeanor. A member participating in a violation with knowledge could be subject to a civil penalty of up to $500. In fact, in the Washoe County School Board, there were 6 individual violations, and I think the Attorney General's office settled with them, and each member who participated in that decision regarding Superintendent Martinez, I think, paid $1,500 fines. It's possible for individuals to sue. That'd be very unusual, though, to have an action declared void and so on. Very typically, it's the Attorney General's office who would either bring an action. And in fact, in the Washoe County case, they did file a complaint, but then resolved it shortly thereafter. And actions that are done in violation of the open meeting are void and are certainly subject to a court injunction. Mistakes can be corrected in the meeting where it occurred or within 30 days after the alleged violation. So for you, I think the important things to take from this meeting are: stick to the agenda, deliberate in public meetings, and do not discuss character competence, misconduct, professional competence, etc., of a person unless the rules for doing so have been complied with. And it would probably be unlikely for this group to be making that kind of, considering that kind of issue. The more likely it would occur in a pat someone on the back or give someone an award for some reason. Anyway, you have a, I told you it'd be brief. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
I have one quick question. We have up in Virginia City what we call the cave people, citizens against virtually everything. And they'll get up and say that a staff meeting, well, they recommended something, and that recommendation ultimately goes to the school board, that that's a violation under that because they gave a recommendation. That should have been an open meeting. The faculty meeting should have been an open meeting. Well, how do you get around that?
Okay, when it occurs during like a
faculty meeting. Yeah, after
during
school.
A faculty meeting.
Yeah, like you'd have a staff meeting here.
We have, it's an interesting question because none of our meetings here, with the exception of our student government, are subject to the open meeting law. In the open meeting law, it specifically provides that student governments are subject to the open meeting law. But our faculty senates, our president's council, none of those meetings are subject to the open meeting law. They're not considered public bodies. So I think that's probably
that's
the answer.
You get that about once a year.
Yeah. I used to represent some of those people.
Any other questions? And Mark will be in attendance at all our meetings, so his job, well, whoever the chairperson is, will kind of keep us on the straight and narrow. And if you see those that have attended a lot of meetings, subject to open meeting, know that there are cases where council is asked to provide their opinion on the situation. You know, I don't see that happening very frequently, but that is that we will have an expert here, so to keep us hopefully from treading on any thin ice. Before we move on to the next important action item, I did earlier introduce the two key people. We have several other key individuals of the college I would like to introduce that will play a role, I'm sure, down the road in interfacing with this group. The first is my executive assistant, Bonnie, who is actually keeping the notes in a minute, and you got correspondence to her, so Bonnie, she's the one that keeps me on the straight and narrow, and I appreciate her help every day. Here is Ann Hansen, who is our director of information and marketing, and so she is really the face of the college to the community. And last but not least, certainly a person is in a brand new role. Those in Fallon are very familiar with her, Sherry Black, who is working on the academic side, but has recently agreed to be the director of the Fallon campus and actually be the face of the college to the rural area out there in Churchill County, in the city of Fallon, and in some of the other adjoining areas. So I really appreciate Sherry going out there and stepping into that role.
And a big Gonzaga fan, in case anybody.
So, next one, and you're probably tired of listening to me, and I'll be glad to step out and turn this over to a new chair to be elected, but is elected of the chair and a vice chair. And again, as I previously said, this is an important role because this person will serve as a non-voting or ex officio member of the Board of Regents Subcommittee on Community Colleges. So there will be, you know, I know that one of the sales pitch when I talked to all of you was trying to keep this, as low as an impact on your time as possible. This role, though, whoever would take this would also have another meeting to attend, and that being the quarterly subcommittee board on community colleges, which is coming up on February 26th. Will be the next one at 9 a.m. Now, that meeting, just like Mark said, will be held in Las Vegas, but it will be IEV to the system office in Reno, and that's where I will actually attend it in the chair. So there wouldn't be expectation to have to travel to Las Vegas unless you wanted to, and if you wanted to, that would be also, the college would pick up any expenses associated with that trip or any other trips the chair or anyone else on this committee may need to take. So before I open it up, is there any questions or concerns regarding the chair or vice chair? Okay, hearing none, I will open the floor to any discussion or nominations and for the position of chair of the committee.
Who would like to do it?
Say it out loud.
If nobody volunteered, I'll nominate Maurice.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a nomination, Maurice Washington, a second. Is there any discussion relating to this nomination?
You just woke me up.
I didn't mean to do that, I'm sorry, Maurice.
I assume, Maurice, you're willing to serve. I'll ask that question.
Sure.
Okay. So we have a nomination, a second. Hearing no other discussion, take a vote. All in favor of Maurice as chair, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's your meeting, Maurice.
Okay. we need to nominate a vice chair then. So at this point in time, we'll open it up for nominations for vice chair.
Is there somebody like from industry that would like to serve? It would be nice to have you get into this.
Everybody stare at Jeff.
I'll nominate Jeff, he almost said it. Yeah.
I'll nominate Kerry Richardson.
So we have two, Jeff and Kerry. Anybody else? All right, then we'll close the nominations and then take a vote. All those in favor of Jeff, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yeah, aye.
Three? Okay. Three? Carrie?
This is the third, I'm sorry.
Huh?
It was Buzz.
Buzz.
Rachel, Lisa.
Right.
Who are these individuals?
Sorry. Jeff?
Yeah.
And Carrie.
Okay. This is Jeff here?
Yeah.
Oh, you are.
Okay. Three? Four, Jeff?
You can add me.
Four. Okay. Four for Jeff. All those, we'll close the vote for Jeff and open it up for Kerry. All those for Kerry?
Aye.
So it looks like we have.
That
was pretty good.
Kerry,
we nominated and elected as vice chair, so we'll close the nominations for vice chair and we'll move to item number six. Possible action for the 2:15 scheduled locations. Is this location still open?
Yes, it is.
Is it?
And whatever the committee, if they desire to meet here, we will adjust the schedule, whatever dates you so desire, if this is a convenient meeting location.
Well, how many meetings does the advisory committee have to have on a calendar?
Well,
have during the calendar year? Is it open or?
It's open. I would say, since the subcommittee is meeting four times a year, you
so
want
at least four.
That would be the minimum to align somewhat before the subcommittee meets, what's typically is a week before the normal Board of Regents meeting. You'd want to somehow be in alignment there. So if there's any issues that anyone on this board would like to take to the Board of Regents, that would be the conduit.
Okay.
That would be my only statement on that in terms of recommendation.
So this committee should meet a couple of weeks before that Board of Regents meeting then, right?
I would think that make the most sense.
That would make the most sense. And Bonnie, you would let us know prior to?
Yes.
Okay.
I can go grab the board schedule. Do you need that information?
Well, like I said, the next one's the 26th, and I'm waiting at that would be in June.
You're looking at the board meetings or
yes.
The community college?
Well, the community college is always a week before the board meeting.
Okay.
Is what they're trying. So the next community college meeting is the 26th. The one after that, I would assume, would be...
It's April 1st. They rescheduled it yesterday.
So to the committee members, would they have any quorum if we just kind of set it a week prior to the community college meetings?
I don't have any problem with that. I would have just a question, and maybe it's, I mean, we tied it to the committee of the regions, which is an upward looking, but I think the purpose of the board is also primarily to serve you, Chet, and the college here. As long as that meeting frequency would meet the needs of, you know, what we project to be agenda items or the speed at which we'd want to be able to be responsive to the college, I think the quarterly would probably be enough.
Yeah, and I think I tried to make a commitment to most everyone that, knowing the demands of everyone's time, that we try and restrict it to quarterly. And I feel that, and if things come up in between, there's provisions for a special meeting. The board does it, as long as it meets the provisions of notice and everything, we can do that. And we can still provide information if there's something that goes on within the college in between the meetings, as long as it's provided. So I feel, thanks for the question, Jeff, but I think quarterly both aligns with the Board of Regents and also would be, you know, I hope, well enough for us to be responsive to all your needs and discussing those things. Because ultimately, the purpose of this group is really to listen to you as the college and make sure we're aligning and meeting your needs.
The college has had advisory committees before, and they only met once a semester. And so, you know, two times a month. There were some years that we actually had meetings, a meeting during the summer, but usually it was twice a year. So to go to four times a year, I think, would be adequate. But I have another question, just since Mark gave us all that tremendously great information on the open meeting law, maybe we should move it back a little bit further so that if we ever want an agenda item on the system, what did you call the system meeting, the advisory, the committee? The
subcommittee for community college.
Yeah, if we want something on that agenda, we probably want to meet back far enough so that we can get it on their agenda. A week might not do that.
Great request.
Okay. So maybe
that's
2 weeks
point.
Might do
yeah,
it.
Good point. Is that an action item? Do we have to take a vote on that, or is that just...
No.
Okay, cool. All right, then we'll meet quarterly and we'll move it 2 weeks back, if that's all right with the committee. And Chet, if the conference room is open, it's convenient for everybody.
Chairman.
Jeff, you're smiling.
How quickly would we be able to get those dates so we can reserve those dates in time?
Go ahead. I was just going to ask, post them or send them out?
You can get them.
Well, we'll get the meeting dates. What we'll do is get the meeting dates for the subcommittee sent out 2 weeks before that and try and get a consensus what works for everybody. And knowing that the legislative session goes through the end of June, we hope that June meeting may be problematic, but Bonnie will...
Can you just email everybody,
Bonnie?
Everyone. Okay.
Thank you.
Chet, you also should consider the lead time for submitting an agenda item to that committee. And I'm not sure, it's about 30 days for a board agenda item, but I'm not sure for that committee.
Yeah, the subcommittee is probably shorter, but we'll confirm
it is.
That.
It is.
Okay. I would just like to offer, I don't know if you are aware, that Story County School District bought Piper's Opera House, and we now own it. So if you ever want to have a meeting in Virginia City in the historic building, we'd love to have you up there.
Story County School District did?
Yeah. Yeah, we have, it's our drama facility now, music facility.
Uh-huh.
So, but you're always welcome to use it for your church.
That's classy. That's really classy.
I'd just like to make a suggestion is, you know, this is a good facility, but as we move forward in this, it may be good to go out and be in some of our, you know, go down and see the Douglas campus or go out to Fallon and have a meeting.
Which is fine.
In Fallon. So that will be at the discretion of the chair and the board, but that is a suggestion is that this could be the primary location, but on certain circumstances it might be good to move them around and be able to get out and kind of see
everybody else. Yeah. If the board's okay with it. And then what we'll do is we'll just kind of give a location prior to the meeting. Bonnie can send it out via email to everybody. That takes us to item number seven. Discussion of WNC's Institutional Advisory Committee orientation materials. So is there any other material that we need to have, Jeff?
The only other thing I wanted to hand out real quick, and I wanted to open this up in case there was any questions or concerns regarding the, we're trying to save paper, so we sent out the flash drive. It was a lot of material on there. Obviously, I didn't, you know, just the open meeting law alone would have probably put a cure for insomnia. So I hope, you know, that most of it was intended as more an overview than, now the things I think that are important on there, of course, were the mission and strategic goals of the college, and some of the budget information that we had on there. I also have an updated, I'll pass these around.
Thanks for doing that, by the way, Chad. It was really helpful.
Good. This gives a, as we've gone into legislative session, of course, there's going to be a lot of issues. This kind of gives a historical overview all the way back. It's really 20-year look back from the end of this current, the upcoming biennium, the history of the budget. And unfortunately, if you look at the governor's recommendation in 2016, you can see it, unfortunately, it's a little bit of back to the future, that we're going back to almost the baseline that was back in 1999. And you also, since 2008, when of course the Great Recession really took hold, we're facing about a 42% cut in our state support, which is a tough position to be in. So there's some other discussion on the legislative session on priorities, but this is the only other thing that was updated based on the governor's budget and recommendation and where we're standing. So I just wanted to hand that out. And then open up, is there any other questions or concerns with any of the material that was handed out?
Well, I have a question on this. I know in public K-12, the governor's proposing a lot of extra money for especially early childhood. Why did he recommend such a drastic cut in the junior college system?
Mm-hmm. Well, in 2013, and Maurice alluded to it, Nishi came up with a new funding formula because there was a feeling funds weren't being equitably distributed, especially, and I don't want to talk out of school because I wasn't here, but I understand there was a sense of a north versus south.
That's correct.
And so within that funding formula, the hardest hit were the two rural community colleges, Great Basin and Western. TMCC took a lesser cut. The gainers were Nevada State College, College of Southern Nevada, and to a lesser extent, the universities.
Right.
But in acknowledgement of that, how drastic that cut was, there was a step-down provision where there was so-called mitigation funding provided the two rural community colleges of about, it ended up being about $2.5 million a year. And it didn't keep us whole, but it did at least give us some time to plan. And so, you know, even though it was a cut, it did mitigate the impact. Unfortunately, that came right on the 11th hour, right the last day of the legislative session. That was a bargain.
Right.
There wasn't really, so really going into the first year, there wasn't much ability to plan. You know, there's a lot of, those who have been in higher ed or K-12 know there's contractual provisions we have to do with our employees in giving notice and things like that. So there really wasn't a chance to make any significant changes. We started making changes last year. We put a hiring freeze on. We did a lot of things to save money, as well as investing in some new programs. So when we came to this current biennium, in acknowledge of those things we're trying to do, we asked for additional bridge money. For us, we were going to go from 2.5 to 1.1 million in 16 and 850. So no way was it making us whole. It would just step us down again.
Right.
The governor, when he came out the budget comment, and he didn't say this to me directly, was the agreement was 2 years of mitigation. Now you got to live under the formula. And so that's where we find ourselves. Now, there can be a lot of discussion around the formula, but unfortunately, in a lot of ways, it's a case of when one size fits all is probably not totally appropriate. It, as a smaller institution, overhead is a larger component, just like it would be in a K-12, and Rob knows with story farming, you know, there are certain fixed costs to run a school district or institution, no matter what size you are. So that hits the smaller institutions harder, as well as I think the one fallback, and this is my opinion, is it costs a lot more to put a person through a machine tool program or welding or automotive than it does through English 101. But unfortunately, the funding formula treats all a credit as a credit. And so as we're trying to do more workforce development and become more of those type programs, they're very expensive. The funding formula, I think, really falls short in terms of looking at that. And maybe down the road, that's something that needs to be looked at. But in consideration of that, we were, Nishi just asked for the bridge money. The governor did not see fit to include it in the budget. And that's a long-winded way to kind of say why you're seeing such a drastic cut.
Now, what's the surcharge?
During the worst of the Great Recession, the board approved a 15% increase in tuition that the institution got to keep in recognition of, you see, where the first cuts came from 2009 to 2010. You can see there was a huge drop, even though we got some of the ARA money, and that surcharge was approved by the Board of Regents for a limited time to help, and unfortunately some of the cut on the state side to put it on the backs of the students.
Sure.
That stopped in 2012 or 2013, and we're not getting the surcharge in the current way.
Now, is that approved by the Board of Regents? Or?
It was approved by the Board of Regents.
So in other words, to re-institute it, you have to go back to the board? Or?
I think so, even though you can see our tuition is actually going up in the next 2 years. The board has already approved a 4% a year increase. So to ask for another surcharge.
But that's across the board.
Right.
EG.
Right.
Right.
I personally, to ask the students to give a lot more, I would.
It's a burden.
It's a burden, but that would be something, you're right. To answer your question, the board would have to approve it.
What's the philosophy of the chancellor right now in individual institutions lobbying for the bridge funds?
Well, it's the number two priority of Nishi, and we'll talk, there's an agenda item coming up. So I think that...
So it's a region's...
It's a region's and a board priority, yes. So we're not... Us and GBC, who are the recipients of the bridge, are not kind of left on our own.
Right.
Well, since we're already in discussion, item number 8, we might want to stay there.
Okay. Well, there were actually, just to give you some background, there are 5 priorities with the Board of Regents for the legislative session when it went to the governor requesting the budget. Number one was the basis of the so-called formula funding are weighted student credit hours, which is really our output. And that those it's really based on completers. In fact, I guess we're one of the few people in the world that recognize an earned F versus an unearned F. To me, I've always known it as an F's an F, but if you earn an F, it goes into the basis of the formula funding model, which means you made it past the cut date. If you don't earn an F, I don't get credit for you. So, so that is the basis of our funding, this so-called formula. And it's, I think we, didn't we include a copy of that? It's kind of convoluted, and there's a lot of different cutouts and moving parts. And of course, as the juniors and seniors, or third and fourth year, and graduate students get double what we get for our student, and graduate students get six times. So there's a acknowledgement as it goes, you go up the ladder, the funding form, and it gives more money, which helps the universities, obviously. So within that, there were five priorities. Number one was an increase of $5 a weighted student credit hour. Acknowledgement of that our budgets have been either flat or decreasing since 2009. Costs go up like they do for everyone, and the $5 was about a 2% increase in the weighted student credit hour to start to acknowledge that we are, you know, the costs have gone up since 2008 and to help fund those increases. Number two was the so-called bridge funding for GBC and WNC. GBC was hit a little harder than us. They were proposed $1.5 million a year for the biennium for a total of $3 million. I guess we've done a little better job on implementing the formula, and we were getting less. We were getting $1.1 million in 16 and $850,000 in 17, which would have been, I would have been adequate to keep doing some of the things we're doing. And the whole reason for the bridge money was not just to keep us whole, but was
to make the transition.
The transition, and of course, to grow under the funding formula, you need to grow enrollment.
Right.
And support completion.
Right.
And you can't do those things without making an investment, just like in business. If you're expected to improve, you've got to invest. And we used a big portion of the current year mitigation for the so-called Jumpstart program, which is the dual enrollment with the juniors and seniors in high school to allow them to take high school credits as well as college credits. We've had 200 students in the program. Their completion rate is over 90%. It's been incredibly successful. And we wanted to extend that program next year. Well, I'm going to expand it. The problem is if I don't get the bridge money, I'm going to have to cut somewhere else because, again, to grow, it's an investment. I've got to do that. And so the bridge money, big part of it was to expand Jumpstart, which then gives me a bigger baseline in 2018, the next time the formula is run. So I look at it as an investment. One of the problems with the formula is the baseline was set in 2014. So everything we've done, our enrollment's up 4% this year. I mean, we're doing the things we're told to do to grow, but I don't get credit for that growth until 2018. So there's an inherent time lag between what I'm doing and the fact when I get credit for it. So that's why 2016 is so important, because that will become the baseline for the next biennium.
Gotcha.
That's why the last thing I want to do is do anything that will hurt enrollment or growth. And that's why it's going to be such a challenge without the bridge money. So that's the number two priority. The third one was also DRI has taken, that's the Desert Research Institute, which is those people that aren't part of education. They're a research component of the Nevada System of Higher Ed. There's no students there per se, but they do a lot of, obviously environmental research. They partner with private companies doing research. And of course, under the sequester, when the federal government did it in 2012, that hurt them very bad because grant and research funds were cut considerably. And so there was a, DRI is going to try and do more work with private industry than government sector. And they were also asking for a small amount of bridge money to help them start reaching out. So that was number three. Number four, the School of Law at UNLV, the Boyd School, has saw their enrollment drop fairly significantly due to the recession, as well as I've heard a rumor that there's too many lawyers. Mark might dispute that one. And so with their enrollment cut so significantly, they were asking for $1.5 million a year for a total of $3 million. And that did make it through the governor's budget. The governor did approve that. The first three, the governor did not include. The $5 an hour, the bridge money, or the DRI money. The Boyd School of Law money did get included. And then the last of the five was the expansion of medical education to have a new medical school in UNLV. And there was a total request of about $45 million in a variety of different buckets to do that. The governor ultimately, I believe it was $9.6 million approved in the budget to start that medical school. So that was, there was a component of that approved. And then you heard a lot of other talk about the hospitality school, but that comes out of a separate pot of money than the operating. And Maurice can explain that a whole lot better than I can, but there, you know, in terms of there's certain money cut off or segregated within the state budget from the, some of the slot tax and some other things that go into maintenance and capital projects. And that money is somewhat carved out of the normal operating pool. So
all you need to know is driven by gaming. That's what you can figure it out from there.
But when they talk about that being an increase, that's really not against the base that we handed out. It's a whole different. The other priorities that that Nishi is interested in terms of the legislative session are out of the SB 391, there are two recommendations. One was for need-based financial aid. Mm-hmm. And that was a recommendation of $5 million a year, if I remember. And that did not make it into the governor's budget. And the second one was a workforce development fund that could be used if an industry has an emerging need or a new company, like use the example Tesla, is moving in once the budget's already set. It was a pool that we could apply for, almost like a grant, and say, we have this emerging need, and we've got to react very quickly and apply for some of that money. And that was also not included in the budget. I think that was $6 million that was requested. And so basically, those were the main things that affected higher ed in terms of the legislative session. There are a lot of other things that have come out with bill requests that do both affect us as well as, I believe, K through 12, for instance, guns on campus and some other things. But those were not really priorities of Nishi.
Jed, I would surmise that your top two priorities out of the list that you've given us is one and two, $5 per hour, and then the bridge fund.
That is correct. Okay. Thank you. So that's pretty much gives an overview where the legislators, the first hearing for higher ed will be on the 24th, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's before the budget committees. We had the pre-session hearing back in January 27th or whatever it was. And there were a lot of questions around the bridge funding and concern, and we've gotten from LCB, which is the Legislative Council Bureau, specific questions related to why is the bridge money important and what will we do with it. System is putting together a response. I gave input. As soon as that is finalized, we can get a copy of what our position will be on that.
Is that 24th hearing, Mary? Is that a joint hearing between
Senate
Finance and
Ways and Means? It would be my guess it is, but I don't know. Sure,
I believe it is a joint
hearing. Yeah, I think it is.
Do you plan on being there,
Chief? I will be there. I don't know if we're going to be asked to testify or not yet, but I plan on being there.
Now, does Dan allow you to testify?
If we're requested to, we're allowed to.
I know it's always been.
That's the question that I was kind of alluding to earlier, whether or not they let you talk Some years they have, some years they haven't.
We've been told if there's a question specifically related to the priorities, when I've talked with our members, specifically Assemblyman O'Neill and some of the others interested, I've kind of told them the same thing, why it's important. And so I don't feel like there's been a muzzle put on. So I'll just say that.
On the bridge fund, did you say the amount that was it 2.5 million you still needed? Or
we were asking for 1.1 million in the first year of the biennium and 850,000 in the second. So just under $2 million. For us, for GBC, it was 1.5, 1.5. So added total, it's just under $5 million.
Chad, is there anything, any resolution we could pass that would help you or WNC in any way?
I think that, that as you deal on these issues, and I know everyone has their own set of, you're dealing with all your own issues, and I don't want to ask you to be in conflict anyway, but I see them, when we talked about the bridge money, we talked about four main priorities, use of it. One was the continuation expansion of Jumpstart, which has been incredibly successful. Two was doing a better job of reaching out to all our area, and specifically, I made a commitment to put a director in Fallon. I had to carve that out of my budget, and I used the bridge money. Now, I've given Sherry some very specific goals in terms of enrollment. At one point, Fallon was well over 400 FTE. They're down to 170 because of a lot of reasons. I'm not expecting her overnight to get back to 400, but if we don't take action to reverse that trend, why would you expect anything to change, right? So we need to go out and look at our rural areas, Douglas, Fallon, and say, how can we reverse those enrollment declines?
And Wayne County.
Wayne
County.
And so that, I made a commitment to spend money there. Third is, I understand we still need the right size. If you look at a lot of the cuts that the college have been done in turn on the academic side, and maybe we do have still, we need to look at our overhead. And again, just like in the private sector, though, if you're going to cut costs, you need to sometimes make an investment up front to do that, either through technology or the human resource issues, et cetera. And so to continue that process, I was looking at an investment there. And the last one, and we're going to talk about, I'm sure at some point, is with the evolution of economic development in this area, Tesla being one, other companies, we have great programs right now in welding, machine tool. We're pretty good in automotive. We're beefing up construction again, which is taken a hit, and we made an investment there. The one thing we are weak in is overall manufacturing. And I need to get that program up and running. And I made a commitment that we'll use some of that bridge money to look at a test bed. We got room down in the Reynolds building to actually have a robotics lab and it's modern manufacturing to bring together some of the existing programs, i.e. machine tool, i.e. welding, i.e. the electrical side, to look at it holistically so that when somebody hits a manufacturing floor, they're ready to go to work and understand process control and quality and all those things that are so important. And so those are the four priorities I set for the bridge money.
Well, let me ask you this, Chet. How much leeway, and maybe this is a question for our council, how much leeway do we have, or flexibility do we have as a board to make recommendations and prioritize the governor's budget, especially concerning the bridge money and the four priorities you just listed? Sending a letter to both the committees saying that the bridge money is needed, and here's the reason why, and list them, da 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 da. As opposed to you doing it being autonomous from the board president, or from the school president. Can we do that?
I think one of your charges is to make recommendations. On this agenda item, you probably have to do it under new business and...
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we'd have to do it fairly quickly, so that's a meeting that would have to be kind of set. We could set up a subcommittee, draft a letter, send it out to everybody, get their input on it.
You could have a special meeting, sure. You could even do it telephonically.
Mr. Chairman, you know, when I look at something like this in my business, I have to have an action plan to remedy this. And it's pretty simple to me. You've got to grow your business.
Right.
And obviously, we can look to the government to give us some money, but in reality, you need students more.
Right. Right.
And how do we do that? How do we get them excited? And George and myself from Dream It, Do It, we have been working with on a committee where we are developing the path for the students to get into, for us, it's manufacturing. And if we reach out to the junior high and even grade schools to develop a path for manufacturing for people that are interested, because not everybody wants to go to a junior college, but we need to get them excited. We need to get the students excited at a very early age to get into manufacturing, and GE and other companies in this area, they're willing to work with you to find a path for students to follow. Now, we're talking about, you know, we have to reach way back, and it's probably going to take 10 years, perhaps, maybe not. But if we can look at that and to develop a path so we can fill these classes, then first of all, we're addressing the manufacturing sector, which is growing, and I can't find enough skilled people. So, but we need to get people to get excited to get into manufacturing. And so private industry has to engage themselves into the schools, and the schools have to be open for us to communicate and say, okay, this is what we want. And rather than and integrate the curriculum with subject matters that is important to GE and to myself and others in the construction industry. So, that would be an action item, in my opinion, and maybe on the new business.
Sure.
How do we make this happen? And can we identify a pathway here?
Okay. I agree.
One just point to your question, though, Maurice. I think that if you look at the charter, it talks about advocacy. Mm-hmm. And I would think that would be within the line of advocacy.
Okay.
So.
All right, I would, go on to what, 8?
So let's go to item number 9, and let's come up, I think there are two items that have been listed for new business. I agree with you addressing the private sector, so maybe coming up with a strategy and a plan, and so we'll ask yourself and Carrie and Jeff to kind of... And anybody else that wants to serve on it, Robert, anybody else? We can develop kind of subcommittees, and if you guys want to come up with an action plan or make suggestions or recommendations, I would come up, Chet, address, reach out to those students, get them interested in the trades and manufacturing, and present it to the committee. That'd be great. Anybody else that wants to serve on it, you're welcome. George?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a point, if I can make. You know, I'm not sitting here looking at the state to bail us out.
No.
I mean, any company looks at a, I came from a company that did some drastic cuts. And if you do it planfully and with an end game, you're usually going to be much more successful than just kind of knee-jerk continue cutting, which is why IGT got sold, because they didn't do it very planfully. I think we've got a good plan to work on enrollment, the whole piece of the puzzle. And so, like I said, the last thing I want is to be going back to legislator 2 years from now and saying, I need additional money. I still think the funding formula needs to be looked at in terms of some of these programs that are will cost more, but that's a different discussion.
Right. And I think the intent is basically to come up with a long-term strategy to give to you to say, how do we increase the enrollment in these particular industries?
Right, exactly.
Then also, there's a new database company that's moving to Reno. It's supposed to put us on the map. It's the biggest database corporation.
Switch.
And maybe we need to start looking and talking to them to see if, you know, we could start educating our students for them. And, you know, looking to others, because there's a lot of other facilities coming here and moving here. And we should start gearing towards those companies to make sure, you know, if one student decides to go manufacturing and then decides, well, this isn't for me, they have the option
to end
to something, to do technical or moving to something like that.
We certainly want to work with industry.
Yeah, and then
but I want you to know that is going on
financially
here. Right.
Help those different
schools. We're talking with Switch right now. Like,
yeah,
get us involved.
Switch and stuff to, you know, what do we need for these companies?
Lori, I see you waving your hand, so.
She's waving goodbye.
Bye, Lori.
I was just waving goodbye.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, though.
All right. Thank you. So the second item, or actually my new item, would be helping you with the bridge fund and having this committee draft its recommendation or request to the money committees. I know, Mary, you represent the administrators K through 12, but I guess we could carry it ourselves, keep you off the hook.
Okay, well, I think any support is appreciated.
Okay.
If you deem it's appropriate.
I don't know. It's an action item, and I think we can't vote on it right now, can we?
No.
So we'll just put it on the agenda and then we'll start working on it. But the problem with it is we have a definite, determinate amount of time, so the session ends at the end of June.
Yeah.
Budgets close sooner than that.
Yeah.
So
earlier in June.
So we only have a short window, I would say, probably this month and maybe a week in March.
What might be a big help right now is if our chair or our vice chair or any other member of the committee could attend that meeting on the 24th and testify and just discuss that we as a committee really are in need of fill the institution, not only this one, but also Great Basin, needs the bridge funds for X, Y, and Z. Just take a few minutes and throw that in. Besides a resolution that might be late, that might...
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a resolution, it's just more of a letter.
Yeah.
Resolutions take a little more time.
To that point, anybody who went and would want to speak, I think given the priorities, at least the jumpstart and the manufacturing one, obviously, our big ones, I don't think it would be hard for us, and Gert and I could easily put together a kind of some background or some supporting material that, if that would help somebody.
That would be, I think, a big help, especially if industry was there.
And I have a gentleman who was in Jumpstart who is now interning because he's at the Douglas campus and with us on site, and I mean, honestly, I think it'd be easy to provide him, if not be there in presence, whenever the timing is, to be at least be out of town on the 24th, but 24th. Be able to provide some background.
And you can always go up to the public comment and just make a brief statement.
So yeah.
Okay. And Bonnie, if you don't mind, if we could work with you, we'll just do a 2 or 3 paragraph letter and send it out to the board members.
I'd be happy to provide some kind of comments, at least from my perspective.
And then the third item, Chet, I you know, I have somewhat of an idea how your budget works, but I don't know if the rest of the members would be interested in a quick overview of your budget, maybe.
That would be, I think that would be
a
great
action. I think that's the real issue here that we're dealing with, going before the Board of Regents and the funding formula. And I understand, you know, that there's a public funding, which would be the state funding, and there's also the private funding, but
you have particular needs, ongoing needs, whether it's maintenance and operations, curriculum, staffing, et cetera. So to get a broad and general overview of how the budget works gives us a better opportunity to make recommendations and decisions.
And I think there is a detail on the...
There is.
But I see your point, but yeah, to provide explanation, I think that's totally appropriate.
So we can list those three items on the agenda, you know, new items on the agenda. Anybody's got anything else? Good. Well, with that said, I guess we go to public comment then. Item number 10. George?
Yeah, just one thing. I know that we're always talking about what's going on in this particular area, but everything that we do really should reflect what's going on in other regions. Finding out what the TMCC is doing and finding out what the other school boards are doing, the CTE programs up in the Washa area, what you're doing, what Churchill doing, that should be part of the entire package. And I know sometimes we work in very small groups and we understand what's going on here, but eventually you really do have to talk about. You mentioned Switch and you mentioned Tesla, you mentioned the 32, 35 other companies and 22 to 50,000 possible people coming here. You really have to understand that they're not necessarily going to come from here. There'll be people that are working up in the Reno area. But the school system over here is the feeder that will be sending people that are going to be working at the different companies, Switch being one, and I'm not even sure how many people. Said how many, 400 or so, for a 3 million square foot building. And the Tesla folks at 6,500, the number they keep throwing around. The basic understanding that we have over here, and we've already talked with Gert and a lot of people, the basic funding for a lot of the promotional stuff that gets, that is needed is going to be at the high school level. The college has already got a grip on it. I mean, you guys get it. Equipment that's in place for machining, the welding programs are doing very well. But you go to the high school level and you find out there's not a lot of interest to get them to that next step. That's where I think marketing essentially is going to have to take place. And I think that's how the budget is put together on how we address this issue. That's exactly where it's going to go. A clearly defined long-term approach starting in maybe middle schools would work really well. But teaming it up and finding out what TMCC is doing, CT programs in Washington is doing, what Churchill is doing, so that we're all playing the same kind of game, the same sandbox. That's my public comment.
Yeah, which I don't disagree with you, George. I think for the short term,
yeah.
Right now, the immediate need is jumpstart. We're really getting on top of that very quickly. Long term is the workforce issues, how do we work with Bentley and some of the other industries and make sure that we not only address your needs, but generate some interest in those students to be able to participate in those industry sectors. And I think the other, and I don't know if it's a long-term, maybe it's an immediate or mid-term need, and that's the jumpstart, how to constantly increase the enrollment and working with 2+2 is a 2+2 program, working with school districts and ensuring that the students know that that's available and generating interest. And so we would rely on you, Lisa, and Robert, and Mary kind of help us deal with that.
I just want to assure the group that Jumpstart program is extremely popular in all the high schools that it serves. They want to have the biggest resistance we're getting, quite frankly, is from some of the staff, because we're taking the best, brightest, and taking them out of our high schools and putting them at the college. So we're having that, but we'll do whatever we have.
But they're still counted in the DSA. I mean, your funding formula is a little.
Chet and I are getting the word a bit about that. Having come from that state on the other side of the hill, that I don't want to talk about, we had the 2+2. We did the same thing. Legislature took about 3 years to figure out. They were calling double dipping. And then they started penalizing school districts for doing
really?
That, yeah. because we get
for my team.
Yeah, we get, yeah. We get DSA for them, and they also get recruiting here. Now, we've been able to, in our district, pay for the tuition, books, and transportation, and that's how we saw it, because we believe every child should have a right to get a public education into in college. And so, but I'm not sure the legislature, when they're looking for money for all a million other programs in Nevada, are going to continue adopting that philosophy. So yeah, but it's an ongoing battle. We're really happy to see that the CTE program for Jumpstart is going to start up next year. And we're, you know, everything we can to keep that going. Do you have the schools?
I think to grow enrollment, the institution really has to look at a lot of different locations. And I know we're not all just saying put our eggs in one basket. Bridge program from the high school. But I think the college really needs to look at its scheduling, its course offerings for the adult student. A lot of those adults are working and they want to move up, and that's going to cause, you know, we're talking about the training that you gentlemen are talking about, as well as the academic courses. And so I think the school really needs to look at growing their enrollment, not only through those high school kids, but also from those adult students. I believe, personally, from working here, and there may be here some folks who would argue with me about it, but the big decrease in enrollment that this institution suffered came because of the lack of adult students. They started moving elsewhere. They started looking elsewhere for their education. And I think that was a drastic change in the institution.
Remind me the name of the program you started here that got some national attention. That it's the 16 or 20 week program that includes an internship.
Right Skills Now.
Say it again.
Right Skills Now.
Right Skills Now. Is that still in effect? Because that
had
such a winning formula to it.
And manufacturers use that, right? Mm-hmm. Right Skills Now.
But that kind of gets back to what Buzz is talking about for the adult
and,
who's
and
either.
The other thing that we were fortunate enough, you know, give props to Dr. Weiniger as well as a lot of other people, but you heard Dr. Bungus talk about the so-called TAC grants, which are the Department of Labor Training grant. And the last round, which was round four, we took the lead on, and Nevada as a state got $10 million, $9.99. WNC was the largest recipient at $4.4 million. And so we're using that to expand, enhance existing programs in welding and machine tool, to increase our support for veterans, which is
right,
an area very important to me, and it's going to become more important. But also, we've been given permission by Department of Labor to also look at reprogramming some of that money specifically into new programs. The one we're looking at is manufacturing. So again, it's not a one-size-fits-all model. I mean, we're gonna make some in-house investment in those areas, but I think we can also look at some of that grant money as well and how it can best be used. And that's where I really appreciate this board to provide input in those areas.
Okay, so let's add that as a new item for the next subject. That's all right. Which now means we have to kind of think of another date or a sooner date than the board members are open to meeting a little earlier. So, Bonnie, can we shoot out a couple of dates to the board members for this is February? Next, you said Board of Regents meeting is what?
Did you say they moved it, Bonnie?
No, the Board of Regents meeting is March 5th and 6th.
March 5th, yeah. The next, the subcommittee meeting will be the 26th of February.
26th. So let me ask the question to the board members. You want to wait till after the 26th or prior to?
I would say wait till after the 26th of, if you're talking February, yes, after the 26th of February.
Okay. So it'd be all right if we just shot you a couple of dates out after the 26th and see what everybody schedules right. Okay.
I know the first week of March is a big economic development.
Right.
In Vegas, and I'm going to be at that. So.
Right.
I don't know how many others will be there.
We have a conference call?
Yes, we can set up conference calls.
Okay. We'll set up a conference call.
We can send in a call-in number, and so, yeah.
Okay.
To your point, it might be easier by phone.
Okay. Yeah. That'll work. With that, I guess we've got a couple of new items on the agenda. Did you want to restate?
No, I just wondered how conference call would work with the meeting law.
Yeah, public has to be able to hear everyone who speaks.
It starts recording.
Probably have to be in some several locations. So we would notice it in that fashion. So we could work on it.
Okay.
Unless you put it out in your notice and put a passcode for them to be able to hear, and then at a certain time they can come in. So that's a question.
The Board of Regents does that in their special meetings. As long as the public can hear them on the speaker and come to it, I think there's no issue.
So we'll set up the next meeting of the conference call. And those that want to attend, we'll host it right here. And we'll go from there. Carrie, any other questions?
If I could just suggest, if members have other agenda items that they think of, probably get those to the chairman.
Yeah, please, by all means. I think we've got four listed. Bonnie, when you send them in, so.
Before we adjourn, I just have one other public comment. I just want to thank everyone for agreeing to do this. I know, you know, I said at the beginning, I know how busy everyone is, but I think this is so vitally important that the community colleges are going to be a key part of what the state is trying to accomplish in terms of economic growth. And we can't do it as an island. We really need to work together. Last thing I want to be ever perceived is we're some sort of ivory tower and we're tone deaf to what we need to do. And so I will make a commitment. I'm here to listen. Mark and Bob are here to listen and work together to work towards these, because, you know, as a region, all the pieces are important, and this I think is a critical one, and I thank you. I'm relatively new to this job. I probably bring a different perspective, but at any time, if you don't feel you're being responsive, I'm not doing my job, and call me out on it. That's all I have to say. So thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. I don't know about anybody else, but I look forward to it. I think it's an opportunity to kind of push the envelope and, as Captain Kirk would say, explore strange new worlds. Well, that's Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Guys, you gotta work on the curriculum. We're too small to do a lot, but I want to call K-12 education, be able to help answer everybody can.
Jeff, thanks for being